New car.
Ahead, Prince. Good evening and welcome to the Village of CarMax regular meeting, July 8th, 2025. Call the meeting to order at 7 o'clock. The motion to accept the agenda. Do we have a mover?
I move. I mean, something is presented. No changes?
Do it in the second.
Yes.
All in favor? Okay. Motion to adopt the minutes of regular meeting of June 17th, 2025.
I'll make a motion that we accept the minutes of the regular meeting of June 17th.
Seconder?
I'll second it.
All in favor? Okay.
Yes.
So a motion to adopt the special meeting of June 24th.
I'll move.
Thank you, Councillor Wheeler. Seconder?
I'll second.
Thank you, Councillor Hanson. All those in favor? Thank you. Allegations. I'm going to move Greg Beauchamp. We'll move you ahead.
Pardon, Mr. Do you have the
I have one.
Have a digital copy.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
So we'll start with the May because we can attend the last month. So overall for May, the calls were lower. We have 38 calls for service in May 2025. May 2024, we had 62, so we had a significant drop. But the amount of calls for involving liquor were a bigger proportion for 2025 than 2024. Mm-hmm. And the next court circuit is tomorrow. And just letting know that now the court is at the Pyro and not at the rec center. So the detention was called upon to attend a collision on the along the Robert Campbell Highway, which evolved into an investigation into an impaired driving. Although charges have not yet been laid, it is anticipated that the laboratory result stemming from a blood demand will provide sufficient evidence to support charge. Or after the call received in May had alcohol as primary factor. As a result, the detachment has been working closely with the FCS in some instance to ensure the safety of the children that may be exposed to harmful behavior. Just a side note, the impaired driving, we did get a result twice the limit, the legal limit, and person was served with a summons. And it's court date will be following August.
Is this a local person to
come? No, fair. A total of 124 patrols were made in the community, collectively spending 136 hours on the road, several tickets for driving while holding a handheld device, operating an unsecure vehicle, and driving while consuming liquor were issued along with several warning tickets for various motor vehicle act offense. Although traffic in general has yet to pick up for the summer standard, additional enforcement and visibility will be a priority as the tourist seasons begin. Member continue to be very present at the council school, assisting with the 49th annual run archery, ridge run, sorry, the archery club, running club, and conducting a regular. Can you put the Alpha One 10-7 on the City Hall? Wait. Sorry about that. So we've been really involved with the the Ridge Run Archery Club, Running Club, conducting a regular informal visit to school. Just walking around, talking to kids. Just show them that, again, I've been here for 2 years. They know my name. They know. They don't know me as Johnson Bullshine. Hey, Greg. They even talk to me outside of work. I gave a speech for the high school graduate on behalf of the RSMP. A member attended numerous other community events throughout the month, including the hand game tournament, wellness week, and ball hockey event, ball hockey tournament. Notable occurrence throughout the month of May. Detachment experienced a notable uptick in mental health related occurrence. Most support were offered to those involved. The community is encouraged to continue checking in on their loved ones on a regular basis. All but one instance had alcohol involvement as a driving factor. There was one incident where four unsecured firearm with ammunition were located during a patrol of the Twin Lake campground. The firearms were seized but returned to lawful owner, who later presented the detachment with the applicable paperwork. The owner were not charged, but given a warning regarding the potential charges they could have faced, YG Park were involved in the occurrence and evicted the campers from the area. Staffing, the detachment expected to be expected to be fully staffed with in community members by the beginning of the summer season. So now we're fully staffed. But David is on vacation now. Now after that, I go on vacation. But at least we'll be fully staffed. But as a member, while I'm gone, or when David's gone. The divisional relief unit will be utilized to ensure there are no gaps in the coverage otherwise. Any questions for May? So month of June was pretty much even for June 2024. We saw an increase in causing disturbance call. Impaired driving also was a busy month. May and June was really busy for our charges and impaired driving. Mental health call went up. Vehicle collision, same thing, and well being checks went up. Service calls involving liquor were higher than last year, but just by two. But still, alcohol is a factor in lots of the calls when we attend them. Sorry. Again, firewall is the court for July. So the detachment that collectively laid the 9 impaired driving related charges, including 4 stemming from a single incident in April. All individuals charged except one had blood alcohol concentration, so BAC, exceeding twice the legal limit. The detachment remains committed to addressing the impaired driving, but a continued focus throughout the busy summer season. In support of this effort, a total of 24 bar walks were conducted due to their unsafe behavior and ensure compliance at the local lounge. Member conducted 136 patrols in and around the community, collectively spending 140 hours on the road. 5 violation tickets were issued, all for speeding. 2 off-road vehicles were, 2 off-road vehicles entered by community TD were stopped and seized in separate incidents. That incident, one involving a driver who attempted to flee the police, and the other involving a driver who aggressively speeding through the town while impaired. On June 6th, all CarMax members swapped their uniform for water guns and organized a school water fight, a school-wide water fight to help mark the end of the school year. We've been doing the water fight for the last 3 years. Kids love it a lot. It's always fun. play with kids. So my kids are too young to play water gun. Given complaint in the good spirit with the officers submitting to the student-led firing squad. So we just said that we surrender, yeah, shoot us. They emptied all their water guns and then left the plane. As members set their feet, members continue to attend as many Villager CarMax or LSCFN-led events as possible and are always on the lookout for opportunities to engage in simple but meaningful connection with the local youth. Notable occurrences, 20 criminal charge, 20 criminal charges were laid throughout the month of June, including offenses such as flight from police, theft, assault, impaired driving, resisting arrest. One individual was charged after pointing a replica firearm at the at an RCMP member during a well-being check. Although no one was armed, a media release was issued to remind the public that the danger of hyper-realistic firearms, if it looks real, it will be treated as real. On one of the file, and then elderly man who had been reported missing was located near Tatchin Hill after his vehicle flipped and slid approximately 65 meter down the steep embankment. CarMax RCMP members, along with fire and EMS and highway personnel, extradited the male from the vehicle using the jaws of life. He was stabilized and carefully transported up the embankment. Using a police vehicle winch and spine board before being flown out for further medical treatment. Any questions or concerns for month of June?
I do have someone that brought up a lot of speeding on the Campbell Highway with usually work vehicles. And so is Lorraine. She said, if you guys want to set up in one of her driveways, she's fine with that because they are flying by again. And yeah.
We'll all address that. They'll have to get her salaries present. And any other questions? I'd like to thank the mayor and Ms. Mitchell for helping out that Puerto Rico collision. Really appreciate it. And all partners that attended. If there's any other questions or you think of something after the fact, you can contact me by email or stop me while I'm walking or driving around. I'll be happy to answer your questions or comments, or if you have any concerns, feel free to reach out.
Thank you, Constable.
Have a good night. Good
night.
Thank you. Good night.
Okay. YTG Land Development, Hannah and Kevin. And
I'm our colleague, Maisha.
Maisha, welcome to you the floor.
I don't know where I should stand.
You can just
wherever. We could also move this and you guys could move
chairs. I go through these slides?
Yeah.
Without
you can prompt friends.
Next slide.
Yes.
Do you want to be? I think Kevin has a lot of background knowledge in CarMax, so
can answer
that. And he's gonna
jump in where I need to.
Hi, my name's Hannah McDonald, and I'm here with Kevin Fisher, who probably a lot of you know. He's been working on land development projects at CarMax for a long time, and my colleague Maisha Alvisor, who's newer to the land development branch, and she's here just to learn about CarMax and get a sense of what your priorities are. Yeah, just generally learn more about your community. Yeah, thanks for inviting us to come up to our.
Yes, thank you for coming.
So I was going to give a little presentation that'll include hopefully a short overview of our branch and the land development generally and the work we do, and then an overview of the land development projects that we have worked on in CarMax. And then hopefully at the end, If you have questions, you can ask questions through the presentation and you can also answer them at the end. And then we're going to hear from you about what your vision is for land development in CarMax and kind of how that fits into maybe your strategy for housing and creating more opportunities for business. So,
okay.
Yeah, we'd like to hear from you. You can switch slides.
Yeah.
We need to have a sec. Yeah.
One second here.
Thank you.
So we develop land that's owned by the Yukon government. And so by develop land, I mean, we plan neighborhoods, we design them, and then we hire civil contractors to build new subdivisions. Usually those are residential neighborhoods, but we also do industrial and commercial land development as well. And we want to help you achieve your vision for CarMax. And I think the best way for you to communicate that vision to us is like through conversations like this, but also through your official community plan. That's where you take the lead on identifying sort of formally what areas you want to see developed. So we take our direction from your official community plan, and we won't move forward with any projects unless they have the proper OCP designation. So just to say that. And the projects that we work on can vary in size a lot. They can be small infill projects where we create like two or three new lots, sometimes one new lot in an existing developed area of a community. And they can also range to really big new subdivision developments in like greenfield undeveloped areas. So they range a lot. And I think an important thing to keep in mind is that we just prepare the land for housing. We don't build the buildings or do that type of construction work. So once the lots are ready for release, it is another department at the Yukon government that's responsible for selling those lots to community members through a lottery process. And unlike a lot of other jurisdictions in Canada, it's the private sector that would do the type of work that we're doing. But here in the Yukon government right now is the primary land developer. And as the population increases, we're trying to develop more land to meet the needs of that growing population. And in addition to developing new lots, we're also working to support First Nation governments in developing their lands when they want that type of support. And we're always trying to create opportunities for the private sector to be more involved in land development. So that's kind of an overview of what we do. And I'll just share some of the challenges that we encounter with our projects, just to give a bit of context. We operate on a cost recovery basis. So we try to recover the costs we put into our development projects through the sale of those lots. The majority of our costs are during the construction phase. And I'm sure it's not surprising to hear that those costs, especially since the pandemic, have gone up a lot. So it's getting harder and harder to achieve cost recovery on our projects. So we're always having to sort of have conversations about the type of amenities that we want to see in neighborhoods and how those adding in some of those amenities will impact the final cost of the slot. So those are like balancing acts that we're constantly trying to achieve, and it's become more difficult in the last few years. The Yukon's also a pretty isolated market. So the number of private companies we can hire is limited, and we have short summer construction seasons. So that sometimes adds unexpected delays to some of our projects, just the limited pool of companies and contractors to work with. And then lastly, development, I think sometimes it can be controversial, especially for people who live near an area that's going to be developed. So often those people express really vocal, strong opinions. And I think it's important to just weigh what's in the best interest of the community and what's like sort of meeting the need for housing or economic development needs with sometimes those really small but very vocal groups. So yeah, those are some of the challenges we face for our projects. We can switch to the next slide. So I'll just talk about some of the development areas that we've worked on recently over the years in CarMax. So these are the two most recent land development projects that were completed in CarMax. First, the three country residential lots, site one, at the corner of Free Gold Road and Mount Manson Road. And I think you were interested in the building commitments that were attached to those lots.
Yes.
So I did confirm that's not within the scope of what we do in our branch. That is the other branch that handles the land lottery system. But I did confirm the building commitments are a little bit confusing for that one. For there's three lots. For one of them, it's a 3-year building commitment. And it's to occupancy. And for the other two, it's a 5-year building commitment. And I understand the reason that happened is because the first lot was sold with a 3-year building commitment. The second lot sold also with a 3-year commitment, and the person returned it within the first 60 days, which I guess they're allowed to do, saying that they decided that the 3-year timeline was just too tight for them, and they didn't feel like they would be able to build a home to occupancy in that period of time. So I understand that the decision was made to resell that lot with a longer building commitment. And then the third lot also was sold with a 5-year building. So there's that information. And then the second project, sorry, and I'll just mention the Freegold Road lots were sold in May 2023. So the country residential ones. Okay.
Not sure where that's.
It's right at the top of the intersection on the left hand side going down to
go. Oh, these three.
Right after the door.
Okay. Sorry, I thought you meant two different ones.
Oh, yeah. And then the second site is at the corner of Rowlandson and Prospector Streets. That's six serviced residential lots. Two of them were larger and they were intended for multi-unit development. And those were sold in the fall of this year, so fall 2024. And those ones have a 3-year building commitment. And the people have 3 years to get their occupancy permit. I guess I thought I would stop there and just see if there's any questions.
Is there all six of those are sold or all six?
Okay. So they're all 3 years or just?
Yeah, all three. Yeah. Normally in our developments, we wouldn't, in the same area, we wouldn't have different lengths of the commitment. So it's a bit funny that that happened. Those country res ones. Yep. So it's all 3 years for those. Okay, we can go to the next slide. So these are, I'll talk now more about the potential development areas that we've looked at over the years in Carbex. So these are Roddy's Mitt and Coal Mine Lakes, and those are the bigger, longer term future subdivision areas that have been identified in your OCP. Back in 2020, let's switch to the next slide. Back in 2020, our branch, the village was about to do their OCP review. And in support of that, our branch did a land suitability study that looked at, they were in the study, it was called Area A, which is Coal Mine Lake. Area B, which is Roddy's Mitt, and it's kind of the areas that are outlined in the white. It's kind of a busy map.
Yeah.
And we also looked at Area C, which is down in the bottom corner. And we looked at the development potential of those three areas. So we looked at environmental studies, heritage studies, geotechnical characteristics of the land, some access considerations. And the study kind of showed that there was pretty much no development potential for Area C, and both Area A and Area B had some pockets with good development potential in them. Yeah. So I think that study helped inform. You can go to the next slide. Inform the OCP map, which is shown here, and the village ended up identifying Roddy's Mitt and Coal Mine Lake as future development areas. And I think a really important consideration to note for both of those areas is that they're half settlement land and half YG-owned land. So ideally, we would hope to do, if we were to develop a subdivision in one area or the other, we'd hope to do it in collaboration with Little Sound Colas First Nation, if that's something that they're interested in. So over since then, we've had some conversations with the First Nation about the possibility, about the possibility for maybe doing a joint subdivision or working together to plan that out. You can switch to the next slide. So all this information, but at a high level, the feasibility work that's been done so far on those two areas is kind of captured here. And it shows that in the Roddy's Mitt area, there's room for about 50 country residential lots and about 150 in the Coal Mine Lake area. These costs are from 2019, so they've definitely gone up since then. And it's expensive to develop in both of these areas. But it's about Coal Mine Lake is about per lot, twice as expensive as Roddy's Mitt. And it's mainly because there's a really long access road that would be needed to get into that area. And the access road, kind of the only option for it would go through two privately owned parcels of land. So the access to that area would be challenging, and it's expensive. The Roddy's Mitt area is not like a slam dunk either. The best area for development is kind of up on a hill as you're exiting town, and probably it would be expensive to drill down to get water for wells. So I understand that the First Nation sort of has a water delivery system, but it would be a lot to, they may not want to take on the extra burden of doing water delivery for homes in that area. So there's still some considerations to flesh out for both of the two areas. And I also understand we've had conversations with Little Sam and Carmack's First Nation where they've explained to us that if they were to develop a subdivision in one of these two areas, the housing would be for citizens and staff. In which case the housing itself would be developed and owned and operated by the First Nation. So those are like different cost considerations than the type of fee simple lot development that we do. And they'd like to understand what those costs would, they'd like to better understand what those costs would be in sort of thinking the two different areas. So that's kind of where we're at with our conversations on those two areas. Do you have any questions about Roddy's Mitt or Coal Mine Lake before we go on? You can also sort of save it till the end.
I just have a question about the cost recovery for the government. At what point with the available land in CarMax would that total average cost be possibly reduced, even though it's like some subletted cost to develop something larger here in CarMax?
Like you're looking at this cost and you're a lot higher than market value. So how would you decide to move forward with it?
Well, my questions to the government would be, is there some kind of subsidy grant that would be coming out that would allow us for the public to be able to afford that?
I think over the years, and like I was speaking earlier about how costs, like this is before the pandemic happened and cost recovery was looking like it's going to be very challenging, and our costs have only gone up, and cost recovery is very challenging to achieve. So we do our best to achieve it. We don't have right now a clear policies or guidelines about how far away from cost recovery we are willing to be, basically.
Add to that, I guess, like a Rawlingson cost pressure development, what your cost recovery at all either. So basically government following up subsidizing that through, let's say, general grants or anything like that. We didn't have anything like that available. There was a point where there was infrastructure funding coming from the federal government to allow for like more like lift stations and some sewer water mains. Water doesn't apply here, but so sometimes we can apply for that. That program has ended. There's potential that there'll be a new program developed that would help, that maybe would apply for Roddy's Mitt or Coal Mine Lake that we can look at. But I think essentially there's likely to be no development CarMax that is going to be 100% cost recovery. Unless we see some drastic change in market pricing and development costs coming down, which is very unlikely. So the government is coming to terms with that we can't always get cost recovery. We've struggled up with that in lots of communities. White Horse is maybe one way we can get more cost recovery because of market values. Yeah, I think the government prepared that there is something needed to pursue land development in communities. And I think we're just trying to get the best we can out of, like, you know, trying to choose the site where at the most feasibility for the least amount of deficit in terms of cost recovery. And it's kind of a case by case thing that we present to the government. It's not always cost that's going to drive development factors that get considered, and we end up putting an application into management board that explains all of that. Gives us direction on whether we can proceed with that development. So I think it's recognized that cost recovery is becoming more of a challenge than it ever was. And there is some kind of inner workings to try and figure out, is there some other way that we can help address that? But at this point, it's just, on a cost, project by project basis that we submit an application management board kind of justify why the development is still needed and why we need to progress land development, even though it's not cost recovery. So it's certainly strive for cost recovery, but it's becoming a not.
And kind of a goal of our branch is to have more, like, for example, for if we were to choose one of these two areas and work together and plan a neighborhood there, our sort of natural pause point for these projects is right before construction. So one of our goals is to try to work together to plan and design neighborhoods so that we can get these projects further along in the process, so that we have like land development projects that if the demand in CarMax rises really quickly, we're not starting right at the beginning of the process and have to work to have several years of work before we have something that could be constructed, sort of like moving the projects along in the process so that they're basically there. We have the detailed design. We have the general conceptual plan for the neighborhood. It's been assessed by YesEb, and we could sort of go into engineering design more quickly.
I had a question about the road, the potential access road to the Coal Mine Lake area through the private properties. Is the cost including acquiring those properties, or is it expected that we would have to?
The cost is not including acquiring.
Right.
I think I looked at some recent costs that were done, I think, this past summer, and it looked at the road being about, I think, ranging like 20 to 30 million, and it's not including like any strategy for those.
And as far as like neighborhood development, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere, right? And having one road into such a big subdivision doesn't seem like the best.
Yeah, I was looking at the road options. There is a slide, actually, you could go back to it. One more. These are kind of the road options for Coal Mine Lake. And I was looking at them this morning and kind of thinking the same thing. From like an emergency management perspective, it's not great to have it out of a community.
So yeah, that's really a constraint that they looked at. One of the options, I don't know if it's on here, but there's bridge that's extremely expensive as well. Yeah, it's going to be a significant challenge to develop coal mines, certainly if we're wanting to look at a more ideal situation where we have a double access. CarMax is, I would say, somewhat more challenging than other communities, just with the topography and the lack of available land, access to good land. Well, it gets a bit of a challenge here. Just kind of have to work with what we've got. But that's kind of proceed with the development that we can with this.
Any further questions about these two areas?
But just another one about like the cost recovery and like when you're talking about suitable for septic or water on some of the plot of land compared to the other half or whatever it be, like when you're talking about cost recovery, like if you have to pay for your own holding tank and your own water holding tank because there's not enough accurate ground for wastewater or to hold for a well, like is that considered in the cost recovery to the person purchasing the lot, because they're going to have to pay for all those types of services if like there's no other services that could be put there?
The way the prices are set for the lots when they're ultimately sold through a lottery system is we get like a independent professional real estate appraiser to appraise the properties, and they give the government advice on what the market value is. I'm not sure how like a well versus a water delivery would factor into the
like the cost recovery right now is basically just the road and the plot of the land being staked out. Like I'm not seeing like a line item.
Spraying costs.
It's not fit like actual tangible wastewater lines. It's not like really big construction for what I'm seeing the cost being. That's kind of where I'm.
There are lower, I mean, for country residential properties, there's less construction because we don't have to put in underground.
Based off the cost recovery from what you're saying, if there's land or places being sold in the village that are have access to the wastewater system or like have their own well and septic field, like what defines what is available for the cost recovery in this plot of land that can't have that? They should only be drawing from what that is here in town, not the total of a lot being sold that might have that access to those services, right? Yeah. That's what I'm concerned about.
Part of the market value analysis that gets done based that on comparables, so they will compare like to like.
Okay.
So a country residential lot will get compared to a country residential lot that's sold here in Oakland.
Okay.
When sometimes when there's not enough land, recent land sales, they will have to kind of look at what is there existing. It might just be some service developed lots, and they need to come up with some kind of factor in of how they factor the actual appraised value based on not completely like property. So for the most part, generally have enough data that allows for more direct comparison.
Okay, thanks, Joe.
And I, just to say too that it's the way our Lands Act is written, a lot of the times we are selling, which is sell at development costs, and that often ends up being adjusted development costs when we have written off some costs, like in these cases where these are so far from cost recoverable, actually write off some developed costs and come up with an adjusted cost, which is closer to market value. It's not always market value. Sometimes we stretch that a little bit to not fully subsidize, because every time we subsidize, everybody's taxes are paying into that, right? So there's kind of this balance that wants to do in terms of setting that sale price. So it's, there isn't kind of a straight black and white answer with everything. It's case by case. And basically what we believe the market might be able to tolerate that somebody would actually buy a lot. Like we wouldn't say sell a lot for $200,000 in CarMax. It's just nobody would buy that, right? So we're trying to put a product out there that's actually going to sell and develop lots for housing to meet the needs.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. So we could go to the next skateboard. The next slide to the next one. Yeah. So lastly, we'll talk about a few opportunities for sort of smaller infill projects in CarMax. And I'll talk about the one labeled Site 1 there. It's a site that's right adjacent to the CarMax airport, because it's kind of our most promising candidate for development right now. Can you go to the next slide, please? Yes. So we had looked at this area's potential for development of a subdivision back in 2019. But at that time, we realized that the cost to bring three-phase power to the area, which is needed for most industrial uses, was just too high. So a couple of years ago, at the request of the village CAO and/or council at the time, we were asked to sort of change tactics and look at this area as a potential country residential subdivision instead. And it did look like it was going to be more cost-effective because it didn't need to have that three-phase power, and there could be more smaller lots and I think a smaller road going in there. But I do understand that more recently you want to keep this area industrial, as like sort of preserve some opportunities for industrial development and permits, and that you think there's some potential for folks to buy those lots with just single phase power. So that would just be for uses that only do things like heating, lighting, running basic appliances. So that's sort of where we are with that. And I was wondering if you had any comments or any questions about this area specifically, because
Do you know what kind of restrictions would be put on it because it's right adjacent to the airport?
Yeah, there's some, because there's like an aerodrome related to the airport. There would be some restrictions on the building heights. And we'd have to do a bit of a calculation and perhaps place a restriction either through the zoning or maybe a covenant on the title of the properties around building heights. But in sort of, we haven't formally done that analysis, but in chatting with the people who are responsible for the CarMax Airport, I don't think it would impact it. It would be buildings that are like 5 or 6 stories high, which I don't think is going to be the case here. I don't think, even without those restrictions, I don't think buildings developed high enough to sort of pierce the aerodrome there. So it looks like we would put those restrictions on the properties just to be safe. But from our kind of conversations with people at Aviation, it doesn't seem like there's too much of a concern. They did what we last chatted with them when we thought maybe the intent was for this area to be residential, and they wanted there to be a fence around it so that people didn't go wandering into the airstrip. I think we should probably, if it's going to be industrial, like I'm sure they still don't want people wandering, but if it's not going to be a residential use, I think the risk is less high. And I think they had some interest in maybe developing some leased. If we were going to do an industrial or commercial subdivision here, they wanted to do some, potentially some lease lots that were for businesses that have to do with aviation. So those are kind of our conversations with the airport folks so far. And I think more of the concerns were like around noise, if it was going to be a residential area. Yeah, I don't know how frequently planes are taking off and landing. I guess during, if it's like a busy summer or fire season, it could be a lot. But if we're not looking at this as a potential residential area, I feel like the concerns are on that front are sort of less present.
Right. But it could be industrial or commercial single phase.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
They have three phase at the terminal building at the Tampa base. I'm not sure if that's...
Just... It's the cost of bringing it out to the area that's quite expensive.
What none of us.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact... But just
hold a lot. Just, yeah.
Yeah.
Just that good ways to get the money out of your projects.
That's crazy.
Okay. No further questions about this area? Okay. No. We can move on.
Just one thing, just that is the understanding that the interest is industrial for this.
Yes. Really limited in all kinds of land development areas, and we have zero industrial right now.
Cool.
So, I mean, that's what we kind of talked about, right?
Yep.
Okay. And sort of exploring it more as a, yeah, something. Releasing it for some industrial uses that would only need single phase power.
I guess that's like where the change came from, because I don't recall this being number one before, but I guess with the change of the purpose of the land, then would bump it into a number one spot, being either or option.
I think where we were thinking is that we were always anticipating the type of use that material doesn't require three phase power. So that's where we're looking kind of the community input to say, are there businesses that are approaching the community that are interested in the single phase development or the types of industrial uses, are they needing three phase? Like, we want to build something that doesn't really have a market here, right? So that's where we can rely on and coming back if you disagree about the types of nodes. That would help us know if that's a feasible type of development to build a single phase like industrial.
Yeah.
And I think we could do like some public, if you're not
absolutely
fully sure, we could do some public engagement and ask people here or find out what kind of businesses people want to open, whether they think that could work. We can go to the next slide. So we'll talk about the site 2 next, lot 15. And I think take the high, medium, low potential that I've designated here. So those aren't set in stone, I guess. We can revisit those. They all have development challenges, so we can kind of talk about what the priorities are. But site 2, if you go to the next slide, lot 15, it's a 1 hectare site, and back in probably about 2019, we did some feasibility work on this site too. We did some concept sketches, and basically we learned that the back of the lot is pretty wet. And for that reason, normally we'd like continue Rowlandson Drive as the access to the property, but it's pretty wet back there. I think there were some conversations about potentially accessing the lot through this privately owned piece of land, which also came with its own challenges. And ultimately, I think it was decided not to pursue that. And more recently, YG has been approached by the development, by the CarMax Development Corporation, about potentially purchasing this lot and kind of developing it in at the same time as the lot that they already own right in front along River Drive, and then they could sort of utilize the front portion of the lot that has more development potential and bring in the access from River Drive. So I think where that's at is right now the OVP designation for the two lots is different, and in order for them to be amalgamated, it needs to be the same. So my understanding is that's sort of where we're at.
Yep, we had a request for the OCP to be open.
Not yet.
If they didn't do that, if CDC didn't do that, and we thought it was a good idea to develop this lot, could we not access it through the treat area on the wastewater treatment plant lot?
Over here?
Yeah.
We haven't explored that. I guess that could be a potential, because this is, Fireball, this is all owned by Hunter. This part here too.
It's an older picture, but there's a driveway there now, some parking. There is a bit of an easement between the two.
That could be a possibility.
They also have another sixplex already developed in that other spot.
Right.
Along the front.
So there's the one sixplex that you see up there. Right to the right of it would be another one that's on this side. Yeah.
Yeah, and so this original access, this lot, I think it's lot 23, if I recall, it was in massive tax arrears at the time, and the bill of CarMax was going through a process of tax lien or getting that back. I don't know where that ended up. Did that end up going through, or is that
definitely? We can definitely look at that.
Because that would be the other option if we bring it up. Want to look at developing that, but that's a good point about looking at exploring the access from the other side.
I guess if it was sort of decided that the development corporation wasn't pursuing that anymore, then we could sort of look into some of those things.
I do will point out for wastewater services that there's potentially a lift station going on right where Councillor Balmore was talking about. So there is potentially something might be
right.
There's options there of where that might be. Yeah.
We could go to the next slide. So he added a slide back into the office for some reason, but I forgot that you wouldn't have it. Could you go through one more? And I'll just leave it here. So site, we have looked at other infill areas in Carmax over the years. So site three, that area along River Drive. Site four, which was a country, we were looking at an area on the other side of the Robert Campbell Highway from that airport area. We were looking at that maybe for country residential development. And there was also a site as you come into Carmax from the south along the Klondike Highway. And if you're interested, we could go into the details, but we sort of decided all of those didn't have really high development potential, and back then it was sort of decided not to move forward with them. I do think between kind of 2019 and now, things are, as I was mentioning, like our context is really different now, and we could, some of these, I think particularly River Drive, we could take another look at given sort of the cost realities and look at the reason, yeah, some of the reasons why we decided they weren't developable in the first place. But I guess this is where we wanted to hear from you as a council, like what your vision is for land development in Carmax, or what you want us to focus on, and how that maybe fits into how you're thinking of a housing strategy and ECDEV going forward. Yeah, that's kind of
okay.
End of round.
I did have a question about site three. Okay. So that it looks like when you blow it up, it looks like it's behind. So the village owns lot 32, which is along River Drive, and behind it is C3D or some.
Yeah.
Is the triangular lot owned by the First Nation, and this is behind that. Is that what that is?
Including that.
It includes that.
Yeah, it was a joint developer, intentional joint development initiative. So there were, I think, a lot of that first part of River Drive side was, it's all swampy. Yeah, that's the community end at the village owns. I think there were two lots of the concept that were able to be developed in that area. Most of it was in the floodplain, the 1 to 200 year flood analysis. And there was, I think, 14 lots that were at Little Sam and Carmax First Nation, and then there were 12 lots of Yukon government lots for the group. Yeah, from this way away from the group.
Okay.
And yeah, the main reason not moving forward with that at the time was again cost recovery and I think some access issues as well, but like Hannah said, you know, the context is changing. We're not finding any other great spots for development, and maybe this one that wasn't good for development is maybe the winner still out of what we've got.
I did have a question about the greater station part of that kind of changing. It's in the OCP about the village hub and stuff like that, but possibly getting the release of that hasn't come to us, but developing that piece and it's downtown and with other developments that are happening beside it, it looks like a very good potential time to be developing that area too.
Right. Is there a develop, like something being developed right beside?
What? It's like two lots down. So it's a sixplex for the First Nation and CDC Development Corp.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the designation for that area, is it changed from commercial, like the two residential, or like, would there be interest?
It's commercial.
It's commercial, yeah. Okay.
For the village hub or for further down?
Village hub is zone village hub, but the LSCFN is commercial.
But it's resident. Commercial residential.
It's an emergency shelter, so yeah. It's considered commercial.
And is that a type of use you see at the greater station as well, or you look at a zoning change to residential stuff?
I would say that we'd be looking at a zoning change.
Paul, I was reading your OCP earlier this week and thinking about the greater station, and I called SARU, which is the site assessment and remediation unit, to ask about like what the status of contamination is there. And like, I guess they've been working for the last 10 years to address the contamination there. And they're almost, sounds like they're almost sort of at a place where they feel like it could be developed with certain caveats. And one of them was no wells on site, which I guess if there were like whatever the area is used for, the water would have to come, I think, from water.
The lots that are adjacent to them have wells. So
I'm going to speak for those contaminated sites because it's pretty detailed and I don't want to get it wrong, but I think their strategy is they don't remediate every single speck of contaminated soil. It would just be not a great use of like tax money. It would be so costly. So they put certain caveats on the site with the understanding that if there is historical contamination encountered, as long as you stay within those parameters, they will come in and remediate it. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the caveats is no on-site wells without like more investigation. I'm not sure that it's a hard and fast, like you could never have a well there, but not without more investigation specifically into where you're going to put it or things like that. And the other piece that I was reading about that, again, not totally being sure what the vision is for the village hub, is no residential use without probably more investigation.
Is that different information than we were given?
Yeah, definitely.
Is it?
Yeah.
What information were you?
That it was good to go.
So it was based off of the land plot of where the building would sit on what the remediation would be for where the buildings are compared to where the contamination was. And the way that it was laid out would be minimal to their extracting whatever we needed to on that remediation part of it, right?
It also could be they don't know that we don't have a water treatment system in the community. Because every other community does. Some people just assume that we do.
But I never heard about...
To really dig into the restrictions around contamination, we should probably get someone from SARU to speak to that, because I don't want to give incorrect information. But I think there's probably some... I guess be aware that maybe on-site wells or residential use there might be some challenges. It doesn't mean they can't overcome, but I guess something to be aware of.
Okay.
Most likely be like a risk permit that would be associated with that land, which would have its own restrictions.
The sampling and everything else.
Yeah. And there may be some like vapor to control vapors, movements, and filtration from the call cases to mitigate that concern about her paper. Basically, what's at risk would be a lot of wildlife that tried to put over the site, and it comes up with measures that would allow those things to be basically low risk and allow development to happen, whatever restrictions those apply. So,
any other questions?
That site four, was that? Is that where we did that walkthrough with the big sand pit in the middle?
Mm-hmm. That's the same one, yeah. That one, big geotechnical concerns. There was near surface bedrock and a lot of it.
Bad access.
The access would require blasting. It was going to be expensive, and I think there was like 4 to 5 lots. Potentially, it was not small, but not a significant lot.
Anybody else have any questions?
Well, if we can find new land, we'll let you know.
One of the conversations was this from private citizens is concerning about possibly our new lagoon location being very good for potential development in the future, which is down the Freegold Road. So I don't know if that's one of the areas that you've looked at, or it could maybe, or based off of what we're saying today, look at the potential of what that is, because that project is trying to move forward. And there are questions from the citizens about the potential of that area being very good for development. So we'd like to hear from possibly your crew on what that looks like, right? Because we just don't know.
Because I don't remember like the Guder Road subdivision when it was put in. I don't remember. But I had somebody had told me one time that the expectation was that I totally lost it. Was that there was going to be like another one on just past where Gator Drive went in, like a second, whatever.
Okay.
But I never saw. I've never seen any information on it, and I don't know what that area even looks like.
So there was an assessment done. That we have to drive. Yeah. So basically, right up in here, there's actually a little block. This. There for country residential. It was a 12-hectare site, and there's about 8 lots that was potential, but half of that area that we're seeing there was deemed acceptable or good development potential, fair or good. The main issue there was access. It would be going through, I think the first area was a little bit swampy. There's different geotechnical issues kind of through it. I think there are 3 different geotechnical conditions that we'd have to kind of address. Certainly not impossible, it just takes some money. And a lot of it is side slope construction, which is also expensive. So again, at the time we looked at that, we saw the cost associated with just the access, and we kind of didn't assess that further. But similarly to, you know, maybe the River Drive sites, it should be maybe re-reviewed to see the context of everything else we've looked at. Where is the development potential lie, or which ones are the best and the worst?
Like when we're talking about like what type of lot is developable, like grade A to whatever the lower grade. Right. Like, is it because of a well? Is it because of a septic system? Like, what is that parameter of what considers it to be like a grade A lot compared to what the lower?
Yeah, from geotechnical along, it's looking at, if it's country residential, it will be looking at the keep and going on site septic.
Yeah.
A lot of it is also just the conditions geotechnically to construct the road and the cost associated with that. But yeah, it looks at basically different, it's mostly geotechnical, but there could be heritage values that are associated, which either we need to avoid completely or again, a high cost associated with addressing those, or environmental. If none of these sites, like the River Drive or say the Gooder site, I don't recall had any environmental. I think the River Drive site had some heritage or high heritage potential. And we maybe need to do an impact assessment. We do what we call an overview assessment, where it's looking at just desktop information. And then if we deem it's kind of simple or good enough to move to the next phase, we do more of an intrusive investigation. And I don't believe that the River Drive site got that far. It just said there was high potential for some information. Depends, I guess, the type of constraints of it.
Thanks. I think that's.
So, I guess, in terms of priorities, you are on board with us continuing to sort of look at this airport industrial area and then trying to gather some information about the potential for land development,
yeah,
where the sewage lagoon is going to go, so you can answer questions.
Yeah. And in a public engagement session for what those look like is it residential or the commercial with the single or with the 3 phase, like what those options look like for community.
Okay, so you're open to asking people about the question.
Absolutely.
About whether that could be residential or whether they'd like it to be. Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Thank you
for coming. Thank you.
Have a nice drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Nice,
good night.
Good to see you too.
Mark, development incentives. Thank you, my friend. Being patient.
We could have a seat right there if you want.
Sorry?
We could have a seat in
here.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that would have my idea strained back. Let me see. Okay. Yeah, thank you for the invite back to CarMax again to talk further about the Housing Accelerator Fund and our potential. Well, number, I can speak a little bit about the work plan as a whole, but thank you for having us here. That was an interesting lead-in for me, having participated in a considerable amount of that work on
okay.
OCP. And Jane, that was Jane. Jane was the lead on the OCP yeah. there, Ray, and I worked with her on the zoning bylaw and a number of those, a little bit of colleagues on a number of those assessed land assessment pieces, and remember how challenging they were if the engineers found them, right? Like, so, and part of that leading towards the sort of some of the OCP and zoning focus towards like what can be done with existing land sites in the core of the town and the downtown kind of area, existing properties, right up to and including that village hub, which anticipates potentially at the time without any remediation information yeah. 5 years ago, almost anything at that point, a mix of residential, commercial, whatever other recreational uses could be coming up. So the vision there was just whatever at the time, you know, that like it was keep it open, I guess, through that, but it was to be a central location. So to come back to the accelerator fund program that we've got going on here right now, for context, to remind ourselves, this is CMHC funding, time limited funding that's got about like 18 months left on it at this point, I think, somehow, right? Like, Tarmac was approved for up to about 2.1 million ish, of which you successfully received half already, which is good. That funding is tied to two things: the completion of the work plan and how many net new units over and above the sort of historic average get incentivized by the end date, which is January 27th. So permits matter is what we'll keep saying every time we get here. Permits matter, but so does the work plan, right? Sure. So one success we did have here in the last week, they've confirmed our amended work plan was finally approved, which took like maybe 6 months or so, but approved post-elections and things like that. So that's good. And also, though, I feel it's noticeable that CMHC by this point, this far through the whole work plan, is definitely checking up, sounds like more and more on the details of progress that's being made. Right now, we have a work plan commitment for this incentive grant policy to be implemented, basically finished and implemented by August 31st. So that means passing it. Doesn't mean that you've necessarily like done everything, written, done all the lotteries or anything like that. I think basically means it's
in place.
It's in place. Okay. It's now a true thing, right? So kind of bear that in mind as we are here in the second week of July. So, yeah, I guess the best thing I can kind of say at this point, I'll just remind, say back in June last month, we did something of a community survey, a bit of a kind of awareness that this incentive policy was being considered, what its objectives were. We did an event over at the Recreation Center. Some of you were there, a few community members attended, but we did actually get some very useful insights out of that. Where we presented some sort of options and some things that were like being used in other Yukon communities, kept it only to Yukon communities, we used as our reference points. And then we go here 3 weeks ago now, was it two or 3 weeks ago, right, when we sort of discussed those sort of high-level outcomes of that kind of work. Since then, in your package, hopefully, I think we had it out for Friday in time, so it made it, right?
Yeah.
We find that we do actually now, we are in the weeds at this point. Finally, eventually you have to get there, right? This is the actual policy, our draft policy, reviewed by administration last week. We did about sort of a few, 7 or 8 different sort of points you raised, right? And then we sort of discussed those through, made some amendments and some enhancements, took a couple of things out. But this is it now. I mean, we're prepared to recommend this between Jane and myself. However, you know, no doubt you may have some questions here. You may wish to take a little more time to consider it. That's all good. Just bearing in mind, say, end of August is where ideally, if not before, because where everyone, we may have people in the community already waiting. If they've heard about this, thinking, oh, when they're going to click on start building because there might be some free money. So bear that in mind. Let's say we have this permit deadline. We're trying to get some permits in and make sure some progress. So to go through, I'll just do a few little high things of what it does. It's a policy. It's got purpose and policy statement. Should always be up front there. Definitions. So as discussed at the last meeting, we've split this into two streams. Stream one is like a standard housing development. This is four units or under on one property, where a lot of your development in this community will typically be. So single house, garden suites, maybe a duplex, these types of things. For those ones, so standard housing development, and then we've got major housing developments. That's any sort of bigger, you know, so those sixplexes, for instance, being referred, anything that's five units or above on the same property. All right, so there's two streams there, and we're going to offer something a little different and approach each one of those slightly differently, at least in this proposal. Standard housing development, say someone just wants to build themselves a new home or a new rental, we decided to keep it, as we discussed the last meeting, really, really simple, right? This is a straight up $40,000 cash grant, right? Like for their project. I mean, this is offsetting the well-recognized additional costs of developing and building here in this community relative to elsewhere, in order to make help it make it feasible, particularly for rentals. What we did add in here, though, after a little bit of thought after, was that there's a kind of like a booster of potentially an extra $7,500 if you can get your permit, your building permit, not a development permit, your building permit done by January. Is that the date that we put on there?
December 31st.
December 31st, right, this year. There's a reason for that a little bit. Say, COMEX was approved for $2.1 million up to. It was an aggressive application that went in at the time with some very aggressive housing targets, i.e. like something like an additional 60 dwellings or something of that nature, right, over 3 years. Huge increase, right? Like, so, however, you know, the project officer, I think they, you know, they want CarMax to succeed and they want to reward efforts, right? So the main thing is they, if your community continues to show progress and efforts and we're doing the work plan and getting the work plan done, right? And we need to show some units by then I think they'll continue to try to be as generous as they can be, but really showing something. I don't want to be coming back with a, like two units or something by the end of this year, because I think it's only maybe a couple of two building permits so far this year. So really getting some permits in, and again, it's only permits, they don't need to have started construction, they just need to have got a Yukon government building permit. Right, like, so if they build next year, that's fine. They just get the permit in.
I do have a question about the 40,000 per dwelling.
Yeah,
or is it per unit, or is it? So if it was a duplex, is it 40 each?
Yeah.
Okay, and is the 40,000 based off of a contingency that we might not meet some of the money that's still to come? We haven't received all the funding. Is the 40,000 within the limit that we've already received? And if we don't make the other, is this going to cost us money?
Right. So if you want to switch around, so was the sort of a little budget summary included in the package?
Yeah. So the idea is we have $400,000 to, and then we would roll it out up to 400,000. Once it's subscribed, then that's it. It closes. Until we get the next funding, and then we can reopen it again for the next second phase.
That 400,000 is the bar of what we've already received that
we can spend right now.
Correct. Perfect. Yeah. So it'd be a cap here. I mean, if you hit that cap, I think you should all feel really happy that something really positive is happening from this program. And if you hit that cap, there will be almost certainly be more.
Yeah.
Right. Like, but of course, you want to manage your risk in the short term here, that this is not meant to be, can't be coming out of, you know, your own municipal budget here, right? Out of this, at this level of money, right? 40,000 is equivalent, is say the equivalent to what's in, was on offer in Watson Lake. So yeah, right. So we went through there and did a budget to allocate how much money. So there would be a total cap. So that's the standard housing development. Nice and simple. Basically, they can spend it on whatever they need to spend it on. When we look into process a little bit further on, they would get paid out 75% of that when they hit CAD to weather, and the other 25% when they get to occupancy at the end. So they get some along the way to help a little bit with the cash flow. Yeah. We had the discussion in the Watson Lake one we were referencing, just sort of said 25% of project complete. That's sometimes hard to define exactly what that was, and you don't want to get in that argument, right? So CAD to weather is very straightforward to understand.
There's not like one less, like the permit, you get the permit, you get X amount, you get the structural engineer signed off, that's another amount. Like we're not breaking it down that much.
It's actually, it was really, it's just becomes an administrative challenge
Yeah,
along the
I'm
way.
just trying to think of the relief on the actual builders if it's a single dwelling compared to a business or a developer, what the two different are able to do with the amount of money they have. So if it's an administratively heavy for a single dwelling that's a one-time owner here that has a property, it might be better to spend that time on with them on administratively getting them the money in better sequences.
What happens if you advance money at the permit phase and they never construct?
But that's what I mean. You get percentages as you go.
I know, but even giving
Anything.
10% is $4,000. I understand your point. I do. I think that getting an approved application could be something you could use when you get a mortgage as a portion of a mortgage piece, right? Like the something you could show the bank saying, I have this as part of my.
So once they reach that point of achieving the mortgage, then there would be a certain percentage attached to that.
Well, even going to get approval for a mortgage, I think that this would be, it's almost like having a down payment. It's similar. I don't know if other places have used that.
The ones we looked at, I'd say we've just been referring to the Yukon ones, where you need to have made some progress through actual construction. Because you, I mean, you're, it's up to you. I mean, say they, you know, you're running that risk of say that some money's gone out and like you never actually see something built, and then you've got to try to decide, do you want to, are you going to write in here that we try to recoup that, or are you happy to just let that go and someone's got engineering and plans and a well in there maybe? I mean, the wells are expensive and they need to go in first, so you could choose. I mean, there's some infrastructure pieces there, at least something's gone in. Like, if you see some groundwork and wells, if you want to put, we could put an amount in here.
But the money is tied to the building permit.
Sorry? It certainly needs to have had a building permit. And, but you could have an early phase here, right? They, because he said he's just listening, most people are on wells here, which probably the whole 40 here.
95%.
40, 40,000 has probably gone out the well, right? Like, so, or the, and the, yeah. Okay.
This is what I'm hearing, right? It's
Yeah.
like how to incentivize them to come get this permit,
Okay.
right? Is that piece, okay?
So let's say the argument, say we put in, we understand here that in CarMax, because you've a lot of people putting setting their own infrastructure here, they're not building a lot, not buying a lot with a water and a sewer pipe ready to go, right? Putting some more money up front that they can use towards that infrastructure piece would be deeply helpful here. Okay. We can, yeah. Okay. All right, noted. Excellent. This is what we're here for. All right, so we can put the qualifier in for sort of infrastructure and that. Okay. All right, put a little more up front. Okay. That, so that's the standard housing development. The process for it, you know, we anticipate here, you know, you put out an intake, you publish it. They kind of come, they, this 3 weeks or something, you know, they basically run a lottery, right? Like to see, if you're oversubscribed, you can make a choice, because this school will say up to 40,000 here, you have a choice, right? You can either like spread this out, do a little bit less for each applicant, right? Make sure everyone gets some, or you just pull them out of the
And
hat.
say that right up front too when they're applying for it.
Well, that's a, that's up to you when you do it. I would say the policy wise, we're going to leave you space, right, to make that decision.
Like we'd be able to do like eight standard developments up front right now within $400,000. Or
Yes. Although, hold on. Hold on.
I didn't read the other one.
All right. Well, why don't we go? We'll quickly whip through the other one.
Okay.
All right. So the other one is the major housing development. The major housing developments, say typically 5 units or above. These are developments that the big distinction difference often with these, right? Like, is that they can typically need a lot more assistance to get going in the pre-development phase. So we've enabled here that there's potential, right? Like when you're working with, and you're only going to be working with big, typically with some larger developers. You know, the Lot 15 project up there was raised. That was one developer we did speak to. That, you know, may need more assistance in the pre-development phase to get those more complicated projects ahead, right? It can be really difficult to get through some of the geotechnical, the design phases, financing, right? So we've enabled, but what we're writing here, right, like essentially is for the village to engage with those developers and consider what is, work with them on what is a package that could work for them. So it could be very different depending on what it is. For some, it could be like longer term tax rebate grants. For some, it could be just direct assistance up front, right? Like towards municipal kind of fees. Not that those are very typically very large here, but it could be direct assistance with any kind of like geotechnical, environmental, civil works, engineering, architectural services. So, but you would need, so the policy enables a variety of different things here. If one larger developer like that is interested, they're going to approach you, they're going to come up with a, show what their business and what their development plan is, right? Like, and you work with them, right? Try to understand what is an appropriate package level that you can. However, it does still have, there is a maximum in here of $30,000 per unit, right? The bigger ones should have some more efficiencies in them compared to like your small sort of local one-person developer. These should have some more efficiencies in them. So we're proposing $30,000 per unit, up to a maximum of $270,000, I think was written in there per property. So the, and again, sorry, that's 7,500 potential booster if they get done, get to permit by December 31st, but it would be pretty quick for someone to get a major development through to, unless they're a long way through it already. We put in here, you will find towards the end, 9.4 funding allocations. We are suggesting in this policy, 35, I'm going to say it's an intended breakdown right now, 35 to 40% of it for standard housing development grants and 60 to 65% for major housing development grants. It's an intention. It's not something that fixes you at this point, right? Like, but it's meant to give an indication to people how much money is approximately available for each. That would, to answer the question there, put you at about, if you put 400 in.
So there's 500. If you go down to the budget, there's actually a breakdown of what we have and what we can.
We can. She came out with 500.
Yeah, it's 500.
Right. So you would be, say you did 40% of that, you'd be at 200,000 for the standard ones, right? So you'd be looking at, if they just went at the 40 amount, therefore you're talking about five standard ones and up to sort of nine or ten on the other one. However, that balance is really going to depend on who comes forward.
And the land lotteries with the build terms. That's what I'm thinking. Just hearing land development here saying that there's 3-year build terms, 5-year build terms. They're right now on the spot of needing to develop.
Yes.
Right. So just in those lots alone is more than the 5.
Right. Well.
But if you get to that, then you can get the rest of your money and do another intake, right?
Yeah. Potentially, you would be doing it. If you have that kind of success, you should have more money coming in. You should be able to do another intake in January, which would cover people moving forward.
It's, I'm just saying, is the 40,000 adequate? Get the incentive for them as like whatever there is, like 8 or 9 of the lots that are those lots that have the build contingency to come to the table. Is 40,000 going to do that? You know, if.
It's a quick, it's 47 and a half. It's a chunk of money. It depends what their intention is, of course, right, in terms of the building. If they're looking to build rentals, and particularly if they make commitments to affordable rentals, there's a lot more money in Yukon House, right? Like, is the rate. So if you were committing to an affordable rental you can get another 100,000 out of Yukon housing next year, right? You put your application in, right? And suddenly you're at 150,000 cash per, which is significant at that point. If you weren't doing an affordable rental, I think you can still get some matching funding, which I think for a single unit maybe caps out at about 15, but there is further money essentially and loans, right?
When we're putting these incentives out, is that going to be attached, that type of information that you're sharing now, to this, so that they know that they're not just looking at this one, that they'll be able to see the background of the potential that you're saying?
I think it should be, and it easily can be when you get to your marketing material putting this out. Yeah, I think it easily can, should be. Yeah, put all those links out there, all that information out there. Right? This CMHC is a little bit like slow right now post election, like in terms of funding, but Yukon Housing is, it's still got I think that's important that it's not just this program,
right?
If it's a rental, if you're only building for yourself, then Yukon Housing doesn't, those programs won't come in.
That could be a piece to talk about, is it? If it's just the single dwelling, one like personal property getting developed, does that look like it's a little bit higher of a percentage that they would get, or is it on the same streamline as the others, right?
I don't even know if we have the lots available for that many multiple housing. What are they called?
Well, they're
major.
The major ones, that's the thing that land development talking about. There's a few around here.
We have two.
And you just mentioned two.
But those are duplex lots. They're not.
No, there's one that's huge. That one behind me. That Peter Gow owns. It's huge.
Is it zoned though? Is it zoned?
Yeah.
For
multifamily. Yeah.
I think
yes. It was multifamily.
There's four lots in that area. Definitely are able to do so right now, as I understand development of those lots. If you wanted to put a duplex, you're going up anyways to get that square footage, right? Yeah, so that's what those lots look like.
But for the major, it's 5 units or more, which needs to be commercial property, right?
I don't know if that one that you're talking about, Councillor Hanson, is that size.
It's
at 5. Or was it 3 units?
No, it's more than that.
I thought they rezoned it, and when they sold it, they changed it from those multi-units to some smaller lots.
There was always one that was saved for that.
The one across by the school, too. There's two. It's big enough for a duplex or a triplex by the school. Yeah. And then the one right behind me is kind of
the
long, skinny lot.
Yeah.
And it's really big.
Yeah. But that's not the number that we're seeing for the major. You're saying it was like 9?
Yeah.
I would, you know, while we tried to sort of put a bit of a sort of breakdown here to give some indication within the policy of what council's intention might be in terms of distribution of funding, it's not meant to be a fixed amount. I mean, like, you know, if you get 12 applications for these single units, right? And that's 12,400, 480, and you get nothing. Nobody shows any interest by January. You give it all the way to the single ones, right?
Will there be, I just have a question for you, Mark, another public consultation part on this, on these incentives, so that they have their final say?
I would say more of a public information session, because if it's more consultation, then it's going to be longer than August before.
Well, to be presenting this so that they can comment on what is there. That's what I
at your service and direction, I guess.
But if it goes for consultation, then it has to get changed and come back here to be passed in that period of time, right?
I think one more opportunity would be
public engagement.
The best for the information piece. So you really get, once this comes out and we have all these numbers, they're going to start we're going to see what the projective people that are coming to the table might be.
You know, if it's a case that, you know, say that we do a couple of tweaks, maybe as we've talked about here, right? Like we bring this document, right? Like, and, you know, some summary pieces, right, to help people digest it. And we do a very sort of strong working with your helpers here, very low, strong, you know, information thing here. Come out and tell us if there's something that we've got, we're missing in here. And get that done quickly. So this still gets out in that period of time. Better than you know, doing it and then like not working because we missed a little something, and then you're coming back and changing this in September or October.
But yes, at least
it's easy to do for sure.
Yeah.
And then the majority of the, you know, of course, there's process in here in this document about exactly what happens when, what is like required in terms of sort of some applications, some timelines, some guidance of the way that this is administered, both in terms of the major, you know, say when money goes out. We just talked about that going a little bit earlier, according to, but they still have to verify some work's actually happened in terms of that. Yeah, the final reporting. Everything, of course, comes with a development permit required. Occasions. Statutory declaration that they are constructing will not be used for short-term rentals. We put that to last for a period of 3 years. Now, the main reason that anything keep going beyond about three, it becomes difficult to kind of track or remember or worry about, you know, many things change. But the main thing is to give, we're putting people on a bit of a notice, right? This is not intended to be for short term. It's meant to be homes, right, that are being supported here, right? Like not a short term rental business.
I did have another question. I didn't see something in there about current development that is happening in CarMax right now and able to apply for this to get them to the finish stage. Like it would have, they would have been starting construction within when this grant started. So if they have the opportunity to apply for this grant as it stands, because they're still in construction.
I'd like to put it out for try and get new construction.
So I'm just saying this, some of the people that are doing construction started construction when this grant was applied for. And now the way I read this is nobody that has started construction within the time that we've received CMH funding would not be able to apply for it, which I think they should be able to.
Who's constructing?
There's a lot of people in town that are constructing when we got the CMHC funding. So it would bring them. I would like to see a part in there that could get them to the final stage. So if that is the 25% of whatever the 40,000 or some piece of the 40,000 that brings them to closure, that would help them. Maybe they're waiting to finish that. They might start another one, right? We don't know where they're at with their funds either, right? So it relieves a little bit of pressure for somebody to start another development, finish one that they've already started.
Do we get to include their building permits on our number of building permits?
Well, that's the thing. It won't be any of the new ones. It would have already been recorded. Depends when that permit was, how far back it got.
When CMHC funding was.
So any building permits after.
Yeah.
Like, unless we can include the building permit in our number of building permits we need for.
Well, I think those building permits already are. Because we, based off the numbers that we'd have to give CMHC on our reporting, they're already included. So they're already included their building permit, but they have never been able to apply for this funding, which I believe they should be able to.
So if it was a permit issued between January 24 and January and now, right, then it will have contributed to the amount of money the village is receiving.
Yes, and they should be able to.
If it was before then it's not. So, sort of amount, or are you talking about
I would like to see what percentages look like, you know, but technically they would have started brand new construction when we got the funding. I would like to hear from somebody from the public that would, you know, add this next piece of information to the community, say something about what that might look like.
In a way, it's not fair to the historically nowhere.
One of the things that our previous development incentive bylaw had that I didn't see in here was that it wasn't available to other governments.
Like no sign.
Yeah, it wasn't available to other governments. Like Yukon housing or
no.
And yeah, it wasn't available to other level of governments, I think, and stuff there.
But our CDC,
they're not a level of
they're a, so they're okay.
Yeah. Rach. Yes. Indeed. We should add that. I would advise to add them, yes. All right. So we're going to give some consideration. We're going to come back and do this next meeting. Encourage as many of the, anybody in, you know, that's been out there and come along as we can help understand their...
So a public engagement piece?
Yeah. Encourage all of those current builders to come on out.
Yeah.
Because it would be...
So it's not just only commercial or developers. It's private developing, like single dwelling, private landowners. Yeah, yeah. But just to clear the air on that.
If someone wants to tear down like a crappy old home and build something new, that'd be new development, right?
No, it's not a replacement. It's
still need a building permit.
If it qualified as a new dwelling building permit, because ultimately that's what it comes down to, right? Rather than a renovation. So as long as it qualifies as a new building permit,
okay.
It's okay.
I was going to say, what?
Well, there you go. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's pieces to that gain you not to have a development permit based on the structure which you remove. If you only remove so much of the structure, then it's not a new permit. But if you remove it all, then it's a new permit. There's pieces, so it's very fine line on what you're asking, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's a rental or
Of the building specifically, if you leave a column of sheathing, a wall structure on one piece of it, and you might not be able to get a new development permit just based off that one piece. It's just clearing this.
Still like that.
That does remind me, actually, there is, because it pops into my head now just even thinking about little things like that. There are multi-layers a little bit of the onion with the CMHC funding. There are targets, there are specific targets for the slightly larger buildings as well as the smaller ones.
Okay.
So in order to really get all of the money, ideally you're going to need to have, trying to get some of these, like, five
bigger ones.
Yes. Good. Build. But, I mean, if all you got coming forward is the smaller ones, so be it, right? Can't force developers into doing anything. Yeah. So, yeah.
Should we set a date for you to come back for the public engagement part?
We can do that. Mm-hmm. I can set that up and deal with that and then get them to come back with the...
Towards the end of the month, maybe?
Yeah.
End of the month ish. Kind of time.
Sooner than later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got changed away. I took a couple of weeks. We have to do some promotion and stuff like that, right? Make sure we're not doing any clashing dates with anything else. And yeah. All right. We'll tweak this. We'll make up some materials that help, you know, to go from a textual document to something a little easier to understand. And yeah, look forward to your assistance in promoting that and getting lots of people out. And yeah, hopefully we can make progress.
Thanks, bud.
This is on the sign, isn't it? Because I went there blue. You can't read it. You need to fix
that. Chantal, look at that.
I'll have to fix that.
Thank you, Councillor.
Burnham Residential allows multifamily as well as commercial.
Is it? Really? Wow, we are like, why do we even have a zoning bylaw? Just build whatever you want.
predict Chicago. Pretty much.
Thank you, Mark.
That's right.
Pretty much the direction we got. We wrote that out.
Yeah, that's right.
People want to build, let them build.
That's kind of what it went, what it was.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for having me again.
Your time.
And look forward to the next visit.
Take it to Chicago or Nashville.
What if you know bus this time?
One of them doesn't have a zoning bylaw.
Can't take them that much. But...
Okay, moving on. Correspondent.
Okay. What is horrible inside?
Humor.
We have correspondence letter from Stuart Harris. It's regarding a traffic management and parking bylaw that was sent out to you. And we also have another letter from Stuart Harris, a letter to Mayor and Council and CAO. This one is regarding, sorry, I just have a comment here. Let's see what it is.
This one's talking about the facility improvements.
Well, I'd just like to accept the correspondence from Stuart Harris and thank you for the letter. I will move on to council activity reports.
Oh, wait, I have a question. Sorry, about
go ahead.
So the second piece of correspondence actually asks a bunch of questions.
Well, I can't.
Like about the hell it's
sorry.
So can we just provide him the answers to his questions?
Just one sec here, counselor. Okay, upon review of Stuart's letter, that some of the questions that Stuart is asking, some of these questions could be answered through the CAO as administratively. If there's something specific that you're looking at, Councilor Balmore.
Well, it was like the stuff we talked about tonight, the home accelerator program. Are there programs for wells? So this is the one that I had said we should ask the Yukon government if they can add septic systems to their domestic water well program. So they have the domestic water well program. It used to be outside municipal boundaries only, and they moved it so that it's also in municipal boundaries. So if you need to drill a well, you can apply for this program and they'll pay for it, and you pay it off over multiple years on your property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, the whole time we discussed the need for water wells, we never discussed the need for septic fields. And considering the cost of them these days, maybe that's something they would be interested in.
May I say something about the rural well program? It's not great for new builds because you get 25% of your assessed value.
Yeah.
So for new builds where you want to drill your well in advance of your home, no good.
We did tell them that it was pretty low based on, because it's based on the property assessments for property taxes, which is not market assessments.
Yeah.
And the fact that,
and if it's a new build, there's nothing there.
There's nothing there except the property. So if your property is worth, sorry to take your time.
No problem. Go ahead.
If property's worth $10,000, you only get $2,500 towards your well.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting problem. But maybe we can float it to them that they'd be interested in adding.
Yeah, for sure.
Big fields to the program.
And it may be it is election time. It's a great time to bring things like that up.
Sure.
Okay. Is there any other questions regarding Stuart Harris's letter about the questions that he may have that are directed either administratively or to the council directly? We will be responding to Stuart. We want to make sure that we get the right information for Stuart and we can reply to him.
It'll be great.
Thank you very much, Stuart, for sending the letter. We will get all the information for you and answer everything as best as we can.
Okay.
We'll move on to council activity reports. Councillor Hanson.
I have nothing to report. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Henson. Councillor Mitchell.
Nothing.
I attended the Canada Day festivities most of the day. I did a little bit early. It was excellent. The parade was fun. I was in the parade for the first time ever. That was also fun. Playing with the buttons.
Councilor Belmore?
I also went down in the morning to cook breakfast, and it was all taken care of already, and it was delicious. So thank you to the folks, the staff, and whoever all cooked it. I wasn't sure who all was cooking, but it was very good. And there was something else I spent some time on, but I can't remember what it was. Researching something. If I remember, I'll let you know.
Okay. Thank you, counselors. My report, I also attended and cooked at the Canada Day Parade and within the parade for the Canadian Rangers. I was alongside Jen, Zanette, Prince, everybody cutting the cake, and everybody enjoyed all of the games, the egg toss, the water balloon fight for the kids. Yeah, it was. And I do want to mention to Viren, for the overhead drone post on the community page. That was very cool to see with the music and everything. It was really enjoyable.
May I add, I've remembered.
Yeah, go ahead, Council.
So I ran into an issue personally when I came to pay my property taxes, and I've talked with Chantel about it, or let her know what happened, and they researched it. But there seems to have been a glitch with some property tax payments based on the undeveloped properties with Yukon government's new system, either how it was entered or the code used to enter it or whatever. Some communities paid less than they paid the previous year, and some communities or some properties paid the same, I think. I'm not exactly sure what the whole picture looks like for the glitch, but was wondering if we lost any significant property tax funds based on the glitch. My difference was $50, but the point was we have a minimum tax rate on undeveloped properties for a reason, and the reason was to encourage people to develop them. So it had gone up to $400 in 2024, and then this year it was $350. So now it's taken 2 years, and next year I assume we'll go back up to 400 or whatever council chooses to do at the time. But I don't know how many properties that affects in permits, because we do have a large number of undeveloped.
Okay. Well, we have Chantel looking into that. Thank you. For the rest of my report, just the community engagement. There's been a lot of visitors. I've been down at the visitor station. Been down to the pool. Looking forward to the grand opening of the pool. Fire emergency services. Great response from a community member, Glenn Skookum, for attention to detail on an accident that happened on the highway. A great response from all our emergency services here. It was, I applaud them all. Thank you very much. That's all I have for my report. We'll move on to a finance report. And I just want to note that, we'll say hi to Arbor. I know that you're here. I just didn't mention you. I apologize, but thanks for coming, Arbor.
No problem. I just want to say a quick hello and thanks for having me. It's an exciting meeting so far.
Okay, finance report. Finance Department, June 2025. Expenditures, just a few notes here on income statements, the property tax here. To date, approximately 85% of the residents have submitted their payments. June 27th and the 30th were the busiest days of the month due to the July 2nd deadline. So thank you, Annette. The audit was finalized for June 24, 2025, and the financial statement were received on June 25th, 2025. Please note that Annette will be away for holidays, so July 15th to the 30th. Thank you, Annette. There is the check log for your review here. If you have any questions, please direct them to Chantel. If you want to.
I do have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
About check number 31393 from AFD Petroleum.
Yeah.
Do we normally buy gasoline in bulk?
Yes. So,
I'll let you answer that.
We do. We have a contract. So AFD is our contractor and they do all the buildings and then they just charge us one price for all of that.
This is gasoline.
Yeah, there's a gas bowser thing out at the Venus Board.
Yeah. So we tender that
for our building.
Annually?
Yes.
Not so for our building, for our vehicles.
Sorry. It's at the Public Works compound
right.
And it's a tank. For our vehicles, so that we pay one price.
And how often do we tender that? Can you
we I don't look into what the term of the agreement is with AFD right. For
you? Yes, okay. It's year by year.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions on the check log?
Thank you.
Somebody like to motion to submit this for information?
I will.
Second?
I'll second it.
All in favor? Thank you. This is the income statement for 2025-0101 to 2025-0630. The revenues, expenditures, anybody has any questions on that? Please let me know, please. So we have a mover to submit this for information purposes.
Didn't we just do that?
No, this was a different.
That was for the checks, I guess.
Yep. Thank you, partner.
I'll move to accept the income statement.
Seconder?
I'll second it.
All in favor? Thank you. Thanks. All right. Moving on to CarMax Fire Department report. This was reported by Acting Fire Chief Dennis Mitchell. Thank you, Dennis Mitchell. Just some notes here. May 27th is a call out. There's a call out regarding a fire alarm. June 5th, fire practice. Just going over gear checks, it says. Lots of attendees. Thank you to all the volunteers that do volunteer their time to make everything happen at the fire hall. June 6th, special event, Tentless School, where they joined RCMP in a water fight for the students to have fun. Firefighters that attended, Dennis Mitchell, Jens, obviously the RCMP. Thank you for the splash time. June 18th, fire practice. Again, these are critical things to make sure that all the equipment is in working order, because obviously there's call-outs that you get, like the next one on June 25th, 2025, as a single vehicle accident, kilometer 3 of North Klondike Highway, which a single occupant was removed from a vehicle and yeah. June 30th, call out again, like I mentioned in my report, it was a call by Glenn Skookum about a single vehicle on the highway, which Constable Greg Beauchamp mentioned in his report is a a very big scene that happened, and we're just glad that Glenn had the attention and detail within his job as a highways worker to catch that vehicle.
We mentioned that it's possible that guy was there for 20 hours.
20? Wow.
Possibly.
Yeah. So
do we know how he's doing?
Yeah. Not just it just says transfer of care from CarMax to the White Horse.
I asked the RCMP, they said he was doing fine, and his family came up.
No.
Thank you.
What?
I heard he passed away.
What?
Yeah, it's just no.
The RCMP told me that he was doing fine, his family came up and got his dog and everything.
His dog was still at the compound the other day.
Oh, no.
Well, like I said, here we can reach out to Greg at the RCMP and find details out exactly on what's going on with these types of incidents.
Yeah.
Thank you to CarMax Fire. Moving on to VIC, Visitor Information Report, monthly report prepped by Jeremy Byers, the VIC coordinator. It just says total number of visitors, 257 visitors for the month of June. The sales, local art sold 2 pieces, merchandise revenue $211.40. Visitor feedback, most common complaint or concern was visitors reported difficulty locating the visitor information center. Currently, location is perceived as hard to find, which may impact visitors' engagement and overall satisfaction. Operational notes. Water system at the restrooms facility continues to experience issues. I believe that has been fixed. Thank you to our Public Works. Ground maintenance, just talking about the surrounding extremely overgrown trees around the property, distracts from the appearance. And a garbage collection is a need for consistent and regular garbage collection to maintain cleanliness and present a positive image for visitors to see.
Maybe they could pick up garbage while they're sitting there.
Recommendations from Jeremy here, the repair to the washroom, which has been done. Implementing regular garbage collection on a schedule ensures the cleanliness and hygiene. Initiate ground maintenance to address the overgrowth of the visitor information center. And consider signage improvements, which we have the boards, the sandwich boards, right?
The frames haven't arrived yet. We have them coming.
I see some stuff on the corner of the highway.
The sandwich boards, yeah.
The sandwich boards, yeah. Yep. So, seeing some. Thank you very much, Jeremy Byers. VIC.
I have a suggestion about that.
Can you wait till the question period for that, right?
Yeah.
Bylaw report. Constable's report, summary of activities for June 2025. Dogs at large were 2. Caught on River Drive. Aggressive dog complaints, 0. Traffic violations, parking, unsecured loads, I see 5. Tractor, semi-trailers were observed transporting vehicles within proper tie points, secure, inadequately strapping and parking violations, says 5. Assist with RCMP, not seeing any. Occurrences, public encounters, 15 public encounters, assisting tourists, members of the public with direction, public encounters during community safety patrols. Open space infractions, I see 1. Littering of alcoholic beverages after hours in park and Allen Boardwalk. Highlights he has here, community safety focus after hours of community safety patrol focusing on public drinking in parks and boardwalks. Traffic enforcement, parking violations outside of the store and on the roadway, tractor, semi-trailers within proper strapping on loads, parks and open spaces, making sure boardwalk is free of littering. Thank you very much, Liam. Moving on to Public Works report from Jens, Public Works General Manager. This talks about the water treatment plant, arena. Not seeing anything notable here. It's normal operations, collection system, duplex. Equipment is in good condition. No immediate maintenance needed. We're replacing a new arm on one of the Kubotas. Cycling, normal. Old fire hall, new fire hall. We all normal here. Well, thank you, Jens. Moving to CAO report, Chantel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just two things that are not on my report that I'll highlight. On reading the Canada Community Building Funding Agreement, it's our responsibility to contact Canada NYG Minister's Office for a news release that we're going to be doing for the grand opening. They're just going to look and see if they can send a minister to participate for July 15th. So they're going to let me know on that. Another thing, we finally had the insurance adjuster contact us today with confirmation that the fire truck from the fire hall will be towed to Whitehorse to get serviced and repaired. And other than that, CarMax pool operations are going well. Met with Kelly and Liam with the new animal control agreement, just went over a few points with them. The composting program is on schedule, skilled project, the tender closed today. So I will hopefully know by the end of this week or early next week in regards to the bid options and more information on that from OG. No movement on the cemetery. DMAP, they're going to set up hopefully July 22nd. They'll come and talk and bring StatTech in to talk about the disaster flood mitigation. Rugged Apprentice, they're coming for beginning of September for 3 days of volunteer work. And YG will be coming in to also present some design and ideas. They met with Jens and have come up with a plan that they will present on July 22nd as well. Lagoon's on hold. BST work is going to be starting July 28th for the road, Song River Drive. Budget plumbing for the arena is still waiting for their fan. It's a special fan that they're still waiting. It's on back order. Hopefully it shows up sooner rather than later. And I learned about a new issue, arena humidity issues. So Set Plan Engineering has been collecting and monitoring data for the past year in regards to three specific days of the year when the building humidity is quite high and how to mitigate that. And YG will present at a council meeting their findings once it's done.
Thank you. Any questions for Chantel?
Is the pool heater working yet?
I heard it was warm today.
Yeah,
okay, cool. Somebody asked me and I didn't know.
Yeah, it went from 12 and then went to 19 and now is at 23.
Is the actual cool heater on or is this what still was fixing so for the roof source?
The solar. Both.
Solar.
Yeah.
They're both working.
They're both working. There's still one more little piece for the heater, but it's working and it could be a little warmer, but that little piece still has to come and then it'll be out to the 27 it's supposed to be. Yeah.
So it's warm. It's warmer.
It is warmer.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Are they offering lessons?
They are. And it's almost fully subscribed.
Any other questions for Chantel?
The business license bylaw public engagement suggestion period.
Yes.
Did we bring that up as like business license needed to be redone?
That is going to be on the July 22nd council meeting. And yes, it's going to be done.
I don't see that on here.
Is that just a question of where we go?
Well, yeah, I don't remember. With this? Yeah, I don't remember us bringing up issues with it because there's probably other things that Chantel could be working on that, like that. I don't know if that's a priority of ours right now.
Okay.
So yeah,
I'm not sure clear on what the question
I don't
is.
Know what you're talking about.
I don't know if opening up and doing a new bylaw is one of our priorities for a business license, or because I don't know if we had issues with the past bylaw.
Okay.
I don't recall.
I can speak to that. So currently business bylaw 314-25, it has had first reading. And when I started, it had the first reading and then it was requested by mayor council to go out in public engagement.
Okay.
Because there was.
Yes, now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay. then once a public engagement, and that was supposed to happen in July. So it's on my task list to do for July is a public engagement for that. And then bring it back to council either on the 22nd or the first meeting in August with those suggestions for a second reading.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. I didn't recall. I was like, didn't we just do the bylaw? Why are we doing it again? So.
Okay. Any other questions for Chantel? Thank you, Chantel. Association of Yukon Communities, Councillor Wheeler.
There were a ton of emails. I did not forward them to everyone. They're just the letters that got sent to the ministers regarding the AYC resolutions. If you guys would like me, I don't know if you guys got them all.
I received those emails.
Yes.
Bonnie.
I'm assuming everyone. Okay, I can forward them if you'd like. But it's like, it was all in separate emails.
So what's
the one? Yeah.
Yeah. So I started to forward them to like add to the, I'm like, that's a lot. That's a lot of emails.
Well, we can, I can forward it to Chantel. We can have it on.
I think Chantel probably got them all too. Yeah.
Okay.
They could just be summarized.
Package.
Yeah. Summarized as like what,
yeah.
What came through AYC, the resolution letters.
Oh. Get it on the agenda.
Yeah. There was a lot of emails and it was, every letter was a separate council. Yeah, and that's it for the USC for me.
Okay. Bylaws. Civic Addressing Bylaw 301-24 application. Chantel, can you speak on what we're looking at here today regarding the Civic Addressing Change application?
Yes. Received an application from Christopher Boland and Vernon Marshall. They have the tanker airbase at the airport, and it doesn't have an official civic address. According to bylaw 301-24, we can assign a civic address so that they can apply for funding for retrofitting their building. Without a proper civic address, they cannot apply for funding. So for council decision this evening, the civic addressing application is recommended 57675 Robert Campbell Highway is their new address, which aligns with the bylaw 301-24 for your consideration. And there's a draft resolution that states for this council to review and pass. So the resolution right here down.
It's on the last page.
This one right here.
You can just spell my draft resolution.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's anybody?
Do you want to do the resolution first and then speak to it?
Yeah, so we'll put it on the table. We need a mover.
So I'll move that council moves to approve the civic addressing application in accordance with the civic addressing bylaw 301-24 for the new civic address located at the CarMax Tanker Base on the CarMax Aerodrome of number 57675. I'm going to say Campbell Highway because it aligns with the other addresses in the bylaw. They'll say Campbell Highway, not Robert Campbell Highway.
Yes. That's correct.
It says Robert
Campbell Highway. Or Campbell Highway.
Right. I just see a lot of addresses that just say Campbell Highway.
There's some that there's both on there.
There's both. Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe we should claim that.
Yeah.
And there's one with a question mark. So who knows?
I would just put as Campbell. I would just put as our Councillor Mitchell. Can you speak to that?
What's that?
The road name?
I've always just called it the CarMax Airport Road.
Yeah, okay. So that's all Campbell Highway it is.
But as far as the Campbell, like, it's always been the Robert Campbell Highway. It's just like Someone's saying Brian Morrell. They just say Brian, or they say
all right.
Hey. So the Anger.
Yeah.
Right. Anger. So I'm not bust either way, whether okay. you call it the Campbell Highway or the Robert Campbell Highway. I just think that we should align all of them the same, whatever we choose to do eventually.
It is named after Robert Campbell.
I do, sorry, I just had one more comment though. Okay. I know that there was some house renumbering done now that we're talking about this and probably for a future.
The motion from you.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
I get a seconder.
Yeah. I'll second.
Okay, now go ahead, Councillor.
I know that the Little Semicarmacs First Nation did renumbering on some houses down on the Zolvik Road.
Correct.
And we should get that information to update this as well.
So did you want that in?
It doesn't need to be for tonight.
Okay.
No.
It's a recommendation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this has nothing to do with the application, but on this list has a 101 McDade. There is no 101 McDade because that would be my house, and the Village of Carmax put the sticker on my house at 103 McDade.
Oh, well, you actually have two properties.
I do have two properties, but my address, official address, is 103 McDade, and I'm not changing it, and I'm not paying $100 to change
it. Your garage is
because I didn't number it.
Okay, yeah. So that's not regarding.
I know, but it is in this information right here.
Okay.
I'm missing. So it does not show a 103 McDade.
Let's just clean this up a little bit here.
This, because that is in the information presented. You don't see it because there's no 103.
Maybe it's just a wouldn't be a it's timer.
Just talking about the list of
the list. It's the list of.
Oh, okay.
Houses. I just know.
Okay.
And I'm not. I'm not changing my address.
Any further questions regarding this application?
No.
Okay. Draft resolution. Well, the draft resolution. That council moves to approve the civic addressing.
That's someone.
Yeah.
We just made.
Yeah, no. Okay. Yeah. So you.
So.
No adjustments other than the Robert Service Campbell being stated in there. Do you need me to read it
nope.
to finalize it? All those in favor then? Good.
Thank you.
Pass.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to not seeing anything under new and unfinished business. Question period. Mr. Morrell.
That guy.
Does the highways compound have an address name? It has one little green number out front of it.
Yeah,
just a highway number. Okay. Old news, I guess. The problem with the highway or the village workshop up in the industrial area was that they didn't have a washer, right? So they're going to build a whole new building because they don't have a washroom.
You're talking about the retrofit to the village maintenance bay?
That's what.
Okay.
So that was the reasoning behind it. They didn't have a washroom, so they're going to retrofit the building.
That was one minor issue.
It's too small.
We can get you the exact details on what that building's retrofits look like.
Oh, yeah.
Chantel can get that.
I can actually speak to that.
Okay.
So, tender went out for a new building, came in too high. So now the YG project managers met with Jens to retrofit the current building to meet the requirements that they need in order. So it would be the design and everything will be presented at July 22nd. You're welcome to attend and listen and see what is being proposed for those retrofits of that building, including tying in the new well into the bathroom that is there and doesn't work at all.
Well, I was just going to make a suggestion about the bathroom thing because I didn't know what was happening with the rest of the building, but I saw at Pearl Burke's yard, he was at a yard sale, he had a washroom that was like kind of a 8x8 sea can kind of thing. That's not what it was, but that maybe it was even smaller than that. But it was fully serviced with an outside vacuum attachments, electricity, so it had heat in there, light in there. And it was just a standalone unit that you just plug in and add as a water tank built into it. And
a sewer tank as well. And for the amount of uses that three guys do in a day or whatever, I'm sure that would have been a fairly easy fix for lack of a washroom as well.
Yeah, it's not the lack of the washroom, Brian. It's the lack of the actual operating space and the condition of the concrete in the building. And it's like the building exterior being at the point of needing repair and leaks and all these other things that come with that. So that's like the major part of what that looks like. The building construction, like the structure itself is good. It's all the other pieces that help it, like the roof, and that has plastic viewing for sunlight to come through that's aging, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, yeah. You can see that.
And the overall footprint of the size of the equipment that in the trucks for the wintertime to be able to pull in there is not adequate.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can see that roof on that building is.
Yeah.
It doesn't hold snow. It melts it off. So it's obviously losing all the
heat. Yeah, no eaves troughs and all these things that.
Yeah. Convex the foundation and the cement. Yeah. I see your point there. Yeah. I was just mentioning the washing because I thought that was the contributing factor for replacing the building. You can get a standalone unit.
Yeah, the building's not actually being replaced. It's being added onto.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's like the kid saying, my horn's broken, my bike, I need new brake.
Access to, yes, okay. The visitor information center. I realized everybody coming into town sees visitor information. They turn this way and they turn that way. And there's a great big building, and like go in the building and, oh, where's your information center? Oh, go outside, go around, and then, you know, that's it. I see it happening every time I'm down there, pretty much, when there's tourists around. But now that we have, see, theoretically, that other property from the old highway yard, you can just run an access right down the side of the highway. And it would be a direct line right to that visitor information center. I don't know what happens with the, there's a monument there as well. So I don't know if that would impact the actual driveway coming into that thing. But I just thought it would be something to mention just so to make people easier for it to get without having to move the building. Or
so right now, is that land plot, you don't actually have full access to that land assigned to us. So yeah, YTG is letting us use some of that property, obviously, to store some of the product for the riprap from the boardwalk. But other than that, it's like it's still in there. Holdings for what their property is, right?
Yeah, so I'm just thinking future development. I realize they're going to fix up that road there for those new buildings and stuff. Just for people to actually get to that building, that would probably be the most simplest fix for that.
So we did have that conversation in council about what that property layout looks like. And there was a service piece of road. I could actually ask Councillor Belmore, you talked about that service road at the back edge of why it was there and how the arena was put there in place there for access behind there. Did you want to?
Yeah, I mean, that road that exists there right now, Miller Road, it's called, is actually not a surveyed road. It's currently part of the highway's property.
Yeah.
But the idea was always that it would still be that someday it would be a laneway or a road or an access road of some sort. But yeah, the RCMP, Karen, is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Would definitely need to be worked around in the future. But I mean, the location of that place was obviously envisioned if the place was going to remain a campground for the future, but now it no longer is. So the village should find some new ways of.
Yeah, they move the building or make a new access. That's
ways of promoting it or whatever.
Okay.
So, what's that?
They're building a roof in the fire hall.
Is that where it was before?
It was up on some work you told me.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Brian.
So, the last thing I wanted to talk about was the bio.
Oh, the bio
plant.
Balanced biogas project.
So, as far as producing energy from that thing, it's not really a happening thing, I don't think, because even if you can produce energy from it for its own use, I think that Yukon Electric, Yukon Power, wherever they are, they have the monopoly on power and they won't let you do that. If they find out about it, they'll let it generate its own power.
The cost of that thing is estimated at 1.25 or $1.5 million to build that thing.
That's the project, the pilot, the whole project.
Yeah, to build it, yeah, to construct it, put it in place, whatever. It's 1 point something or $1 million. Going through the presentation and asked as many questions as I could think of from those guys about this, there's no previously made unit like that that he can refer to and say, okay, yeah, this works good, and, you know, changes, whatever. There's nothing that's already confirmed, like nothing that's been produced already that they can look towards to say, yeah, this works or it doesn't work. So it's unconfirmed science as far as I'm concerned. It's just, they're just trying to make it work. And I understand this, you know, it's all good intentions and that, but you're still spending over $1 million to produce this thing, whether it's coming out of my bog or yours or whoever, it's federal money, it's territorial money, it's town money, whatever. It still costs that much to produce that thing, which will not generate anything in the end and not an end product. He said, oh, we might be able to get a couple of buckets of topsoil or fertilizer, biochar to put in your garden or whatever. It's never going to pay for itself. That is impossible for it to pay for itself. So that brings it down to the operational, the annual operating cost, which is I have to read off my list here because I have to remember it. $191,773 per annum to run that thing. There's no cost benefit for it. There's no business case here that makes this work in my mind. And it should be just dropped completely without ever doing any more work. That's my suggestion. Because it's just a lose-lose, spending money, kind of, you know, $250,000 every year to run that thing, where everybody get their little plastic bucket and go up there. Well, I'm putting it in my garden anyway, so it doesn't matter to me. But it's just a money pit. I don't think we should be spending money on that. I don't think we should be spending our taxpayers' dollars on it, anybody's tax dollars on it.
Well, what I can thank you for that, Brad. What I could do is have Chantel put together the exact total costs of what we have into that project, so the public could know and where we stand with that, because the council will definitely look at what you're saying and take that into consideration on when we move forward or when that comes to the table to look at that.
Okay. Yeah, have we made a commitment to somebody about this already? Like, there's no...
Yeah,
I can talk to that. So currently we have $0 in that. When I started, there was $100,000 on the table for this big project. And I said, it doesn't make sense. We need to break out the composting program and do the composting program and then allow Balanced Biogas to try and find their own funding to do a pilot program to see how that biogas digester would work. And it wouldn't be coming from our operations at all.
Yeah.
So we have $0 in that program itself. It would be a pilot project that BioBalance Gas did next year. This year, we're only focusing on our composting program.
Which is with BioBalance. Balanced Biogas.
Yes, yes.
That is, but it's separate from what you're talking
separate.
About.
Completely
separate. Okay. Yeah. Just wanted to make sure that my voice was heard about this tax dollars being spent so
quickly. I appreciate you taking notes with the yearly costs of running it.
Well, that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. You can go buy a car or whatever you want, but if it's burning 500 gallons a day of fuel, you can't be driving it. So what's the point, right?
Do you have anything else for us?
I was just going to ask about the, I didn't understand what Stuart was saying there, what you were saying about what Stuart's letters were. Was he talking about a petition or something about the bylaw, the speed bylaws?
We can pull it up for you here, for instance.
He was looking on.
Just to remind you, like, if you have questions, you can direct it to me and we can get you some answers. But, like, we haven't yet responded to anything that Stuart has on this list other than what Councillor Belmar was talking about.
So he hasn't put forward a petition or anything?
Not since the last
one.
One that we had on the agenda.
Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morrell.
Great, you guys have a good day.
You too.
You see you later.
Later.
Okay. And moving on, not seeing any in the camera, just move to adjournment. Mm-hmm. They have a motion.
Yeah. I'll move to adjourn.
Thank you.
Thank you, Arbor. Thanks,
Arbor.
Have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you.